Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Welcome back. Overnight America continues. Our guest, I swear that every time Alex is in producing and when producer Mike's out, it seems like our regularly scheduled guests decide not to answer their phone. Maybe part of it's being later in the night. Who knows? But still, that stinks. That so stinks. But I had another thing I was going to do, and we've seen a lot in the news right now. It has to do with what's going on in Iran. And part of Iran is more than just the people that are committing these terrorist acts, the ones that are out there, and their main focus in life is to kill Americans or whatever, anyone, wipe Israel off the face of the earth. I mean, we take out a terrorist, they retaliate, no American lives were lost. President Trump says, all right, I guess we're going to stand the line, but we're not going to retaliate by force. Well, was there force? Maybe there was force. Yesterday, the big question was, hey, isn't it kind of strange that this plane was shot down right around the same time the Iranians were shooting at one of our military bases where American soldiers were? That's kind of strange, right? It's weird that there would be some sort of coincidence with that. And I don't think anyone believed the coincidence itself. I think what people believed was that they, and in this case, Iran, would not tell the truth of what happened. They said, oh, it looks like it was a malfunction. Yeah, that's the ticket, malfunction. Then, oh, yeah, the black box. Don't worry about that black box. We can't do anything with it. That's no good. Then yesterday, one of the big pieces of breaking news was that, oh, that's weird. Why are there a bunch of holes in the plane? That's pretty consistent when it's shot down by missile. Pretty consistent being shot down by missile. Well, that's strange, isn't it? I wonder why Iran would lie about something like that. In this case, there were about 60 Canadians that were on. And I think a lot of people were watching what the response of Canada would be. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says intelligence now indicates the Ukrainian passenger aircraft that crashed outside of Tehran, killing everyone on board, 138, it was destined for Canada, was shot down by a missile. Not just any missile. Iranian missile. Not just any missile. We have intelligence from multiple sources, including our allies and our own intelligence. So this is what Justin Trudeau said earlier today.
We have intelligence from multiple sources, including our allies and our own intelligence. The evidence indicates that the plane was shot down by an Iranian surface-to-air missile. This may well have been unintentional. This new information reinforces...
I just say, why are they so optimistic about all of this? And President Trump was like this, too. President Trump was exactly like this. Oh, it could have been unintentional. Isn't that crazy? You're just walking around and unintentionally shoot a missile up at a passenger plane. Oh, yeah. Happens all the time. Why are they so stinking optimistic about that? Don't you wish they were a little bit more angry about what just happened here? So it's on the heels of them launching rockets at this military base where other people were, including Iraqis and Americans. Luckily, none were killed. Luckily, it was just property damage. Luckily. But a couple hours later, oh, that's weird. Plane was shot out. No, it had to have been just pure coincidence, by accident. You got to get angry over something. Why are they taking such a passive look at this? And why are you giving Iran a pass on it? This is nuts to me. I'll play the rest of the statement here. Don't you wish there was a little bit more emotion in all of this? Don't you wish there were... And listen, President Trump wasn't much better in his response to all of this. Even though it didn't actually impact anything of America, even though it didn't impact because there was no United States citizens on this plane, No, mostly since the plane was going from Iran to Canada, you got, what was it, 60-some Canadians on there. But still, show a little emotion on this.
This may well have been unintentional. This new information reinforces the need for a thorough investigation into this matter. Canada is working with its allies to ensure that a thorough and credible investigation is conducted to determine the causes of this fatal crash. As I said yesterday, Canadians have questions and they deserve answers.
They have questions and they deserve answers. It's a little bit more than that. I think they deserve more than answers. They deserve justice being served and your country backing you other than, oh, what we really hope is a thorough report that everyone could read so we can fully understand that Iran is a terrible, terrible actor in this occasion. I mean, there were families on there. There were newlyweds. They want to point these things out, but it's highly likely that their missile took this thing down and they're not being forthcoming or honest on how it happened to begin with. President Trump was asked about it. Here's what he said.
Mr. President, the plane that went down from Iran, what do you think happened to that plane?
Well, I have my suspicions. It was very, I don't want to say that because other people have those suspicions also. It's a tragic thing when I see that. It's a tragic thing. But somebody could have made a mistake on the other side. Could have made a mistake. It was flying. It was flying in, not our system. No, it has nothing to do with us. It was flying in a pretty rough neighborhood, and somebody could have made a mistake. Some people say it was mechanical. I personally don't think that's even a question. Personally, so we'll see what happens. I don't know. I really don't know. I don't want to get. That's up to them. At some point, they'll release the black box. Ideally, they'd get it to Boeing, but if they gave it to France or if they gave it to some other country, that would be okay, too. I think, ideally, that will be released. I have a feeling that it's just something very terrible happened. Very devastating.
I would like a little bit, more force when it comes to a response like that. What I would have loved to have heard was President Trump say, we're going to stand by our friends in Canada where they've lost many lives. They want us to help with this investigation. We will. Well, if they need help, we're just going to stand by them. That's what we're going to do. We're going to help them along the way. What they want to do, we're going to help. But when you have Canada and Justin Trudeau standing up there, which, by the way, he made this public appearance while not wearing blackface. So good for him. So he was standing up there and he was doing his speech and he made these very calm. Oh, we want to know what the truth is. We're going to fill out the proper forms and we're going to make sure that the report is thorough so we can send it to all the families of the victims that lost lives so they can know exactly what happened with Iran because we think that'll help them sleep better at night. You know what would help me sleep better at night? If I had a family member on there. If you took a little bit of initiative and said, we're going to seek justice for the people that did this. If we find out who's responsible, we'll make sure they're held responsible and accountable for killing your family members. Maybe you start there. Why don't you do something like that? Why are we going all soft in Iran? Honestly, why are we going so soft? Iran is not a good actor, period. Maybe I'm overboard on this. 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Why all of a sudden are they just accepting the word of Iran? Oh, we're just going to do. Is there something else that they haven't reported? Is there something else when it comes to the intelligence that we don't know about? Fine, that could all be true. But on the heels of them purposely attacking a military base in Iraq where American soldiers were being housed, luckily they were able to thwart any lost lives. Now we're supposed to just believe that, oh, this and by all means was in good faith. Oh, they didn't. It's just a pure old accident. Here's what CBS News said. Chris Van Cleve.
Federal officials say missile pieces appear to have been found near the crash scene. Federal President Trump told reporters.
Oh, interesting. Missile pieces. No, I'm sure if you just. Why don't we just take Iran's word for it and say, oh, no. Don't worry about that. Malfunctions.
Federal officials say missile pieces appear to have been found near the crash scene. Federal President Trump told reporters he had suspicions something happened to that plane.
It was flying in a pretty rough neighborhood. And somebody could have made a mistake. Some people say it was mechanical. I personally don't think that's even a question, personally.
Iranian military units were on high alert at the time of the shootdown. It came 4 hours after Iran fired missiles at two bases in Iraq, home to U.S. troops. The FAA had warned U.S. pilots to avoid the area.
This is so nuts. So here's what Iran could do, and this is would be their best defense. They are grossly incompetent. They don't have any idea what they're doing, and they were just shooting at whatever was in the sky. That's the best you can say about Iran. Absolute best. A bunch of knuckleheads that don't know what they're doing. And all their purpose is to kill anything in sight. All right? That's the best you can say about them in a scenario like this. Let me go to Steve, who's calling in. Hello, Steve.
Yes, good evening. Very simple answer, and I'm sorry it's so simple, but Trump speaks the truth. He did the right thing. He eliminated what is best for the United States of America and for your families. And if you don't get it, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Amen.
Yeah.
Done.
That's it. What with this plane going down, you have any thoughts? Do you think that Iran is even telling them a little bit of the truth?
No.
No, they can't. I think they're incapable of telling the truth.
I'm going to pull a Trump lingo here. No.
I think they're incapable. Honestly, I think they're incapable. I don't think they
don't have
tell the truth
technical
anytime.
Capabilities. They're, you know, I worked at, and I'm not going to name the contractor, the manufacturer, but I worked at a company that used to produce that technology. Mm-hmm. The answer is no.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Steve, for that. Have a good night.
All right. Have a good night.
Yeah, I'd be curious what type of technology they're talking about if they say it was anti-aircraft. We're talking about a passenger plane, not a military, all right? There's a big difference between the two of them. John calling in. Hi.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for taking the call. I'm going to throw out a conspiracy theory here because that's what I guess I do. But when I first heard this, I thought, well, Iran probably, you know, they were expecting, I believe, Trump to immediately start firing rockets back, probably. And so, you know, my thought is they probably shot down this airliner so then they could blame it on the U.S. and Trump. I hate to think somebody is that evil, but I sure wouldn't put it past Iran to do that.
Oh, they are evil. No, and listen, this plane was leaving for Canada, so do they not have simple procedures in place when it comes to trafficking air flight? Even if it
right.
is military or whatnot, there are procedures in place that would be able to prevent this from happening. And the reason we know that is because, I don't know, planes lift off and land all the time in areas that are dangerous, that are always looking for this sort of thing. So, I mean,
right.
I don't believe them one bit. And if I don't know exactly what happened here. You can't trust them in this investigation. I know Iran, even though it happened in Iraq, it happened in that area. Don't trust them with this investigation. You got to take it over for yourself. Don't trust their word for it. They're a bunch of liars. And they got to show a little bit more emotion when all these lives are lost. And I'd like to see Canada get a little worked up about this. This involves them.
It sure does.
All right. Thank
sure
you, John. Does. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give the number again at 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. And Richard's calling in. Hi, Richard.
Hello. I think President Trump made a good response. I think he showed considerable sympathy and empathy for the victims, but it's too early to blame it on any kind of militaristic intentions by Iran. I think although the evidence may be coming in, and at that point when there's enough evidence, then we can go forward with that if need be. But right now the president is promoting calm and, you know, a reasoned approach. And I think that's the presidential way. That's what he should do.
So the last couple of days, you've seen maybe a different side of President Trump?
I think he's been presidential throughout this. I think people are trying to criticize him any way they can. But I think it's pretty obvious what that consists of. But I think it is in terms of his actual performance, I think he's doing a great job.
Yeah. Well, why? It sounds like you may be giving Iran the benefit of the doubt here. Is that what you're doing when it comes to this plane crash?
It's not a national security issue for us.
That's
as
true.
As far as I know right now, at this point, mm-hmm. It happened in Iran, not in Iraq, where our bases are. Mm-hmm. And it does not involve any American citizens. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why President Trump decided, you know, not to go further with it at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, if we find out the Russians were behind it, or it was actually intended as a military strike of some kind mm-hmm. by Iran or Russia or whatever, then we have to act on that evidence.
Okay, very good.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Richard. Now, maybe calm is the way to play this. This is, again, if I'm President Trump and I know what I know and I have the intelligence and you know a missile took down this passenger airline that was going from Iran to Canada, it had a bunch of Canadians, 60-some Canadians, less than a third, but, you know, almost a third. No, I guess it would be more than a third. So, yeah, about more than a third of them. And you are standing here and you share a border with Canada and Justin Trudeau comes out and says, "We are looking forward to reading the report." No emotion. I would be so mad. I would be so mad if I had a family member on that plane. And the best they can bring out is, "Well, I look forward to reading the report. It'll be a nice little fun time to read it. And then we'll figure out what to do." I would rather President Trump to come out and say, "Canada, we got your back. You need our help on this. We know Iran are some nasty people, and we know that they're capable of shooting down passenger airlines. So we got your back on this." You know, when terrorists hit other countries and other allies, we can get along with other countries in times like this. Think about what happened to France, and they were hit with these terrorist attacks. These people coming in and doing some terrible things. As much as the United States doesn't get along with France, or as much as the United States may disagree with them on a lot of policy issues, or they get climate change and the Paris Accord and blah, 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 blah. Guess what happens when someone messes with them? The United States says, "We got your back. We got your back." It happens with allies all the time. You may disagree with them, but help. And I think I would like to see us step up and say, "Hey, we got a common enemy, Iran." You know what else? Canada, by the way, they don't have any ties to Iran. They cut ties with Iran, 2012, was it? So they know they're bad actors. Come on now. You don't have to be so calm about all of this. Maybe I'm just being irrational. 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. That's what we're talking about, the plane crash in Iran. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
I want to thank again our guest this half hour. Tom Voss is co-author of the book, Where War Ends. You can find that online now. Tom Voss, by the way, where can people find your book?
You can find it where most books are sold. So it's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Target.
Awesome. I wanted to maybe look at some of those symptoms of PTSD. What are some of those things that those suffering from it have maybe some common things that they're suffering from?
Yeah, I mean, depression is a big one. Anxiety, insomnia, panic attacks. These are the things that I experienced when I came back from my deployment.
Did it seem to be consistent throughout the time after, or did it start to maybe lessen further away you were removed from war?
What ended up happening, and I kind of talk about this in the book, is that the physical conditioning of the body is in a dangerous situation is post-traumatic stress, and this is just my interpretation of it. So your body's conditioned to be in a dangerous environment. So when it comes, when you come home, it does, for me, it did diminish, but at the same time, I started asking these moral questions, like, am I a good person after I've witnessed and participated in these things? Can I be forgiven? These were the tough questions that actually fed into a lot of those symptoms as well.
Yeah. Let's say you have a family member or a friend that you believe shows some of these symptoms. What's the best thing that person can do to support that veteran?
I think approaching them with coming from a place of non-judgment and just letting them know that you're there to support, and it's okay if they don't want to talk right now, and it's okay if they don't want to talk, you know, in the next couple of days. But I think just doing the outreach, saying that, like, I know I don't understand what you've been through, but I'm here to support if you ever need it. And just keeping the door open is really important and coming from a place of non-judgment.
Wow. You know, part of the title of your book is A Combat Veteran's 2,700-Mile Journey to Heal. 2,700 miles. What's this journey that you went through?
Myself and another Iraq War veteran, Anthony Anderson, we walked from Wisconsin to California to start to process what we experienced on our deployment.
I'm sorry, you cut out there for a second. So I missed that last part of what you said.
Yeah, we walked across the country from Wisconsin to California by foot. We just had rucksacks with us, and we really, the reason behind it was we were both in a pretty dark and deep place. And we knew we needed to do something to process and really kind of acknowledge the experience that we had while we were both deployed.
Wow.
And that, it was quite the journey.
So where did you start and where did you end?
We started in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, right at Lake Michigan, and ended at the Santa Monica Pier in California.
All right. So you did all of that by foot, that whole distance?
Yeah. Yeah, it took us 5 months to walk the whole way.
Wow. What time of year did you do it?
We did it in late summer, so we could make it into the Southwest by winter time. So, we got caught in some snow a couple times.
Oh,
but,
no kidding. I don't even know how you can do that. That is something else. Well, how many shoes did you go through during that time?
I went through a few pairs, but my buddy Anthony, he has a 16 double E shoe size, so Whoa. We only could find him shoes in Iowa farm Ooh. Store.
All right, so you had to have talked to certain people on the way from Wisconsin to California. You encountered people at each stop. So what? Tell me what an average day would look like for you when you're walking this journey.
Well, I mean, we would get up with usually with the sunrise, and our goal each day was to walk 20 miles. Sometimes that worked out, sometimes that didn't, but that was the goal. So at the end of the day, we would either find a place to camp, and sometimes people would donate hotels for us for the evening, or let us, stay with them. And we had a tremendous support, people showing up and showing their support for veterans.
Yeah, wow, that's such a long way to walk. What did you do to keep yourself occupied during that time?
Well, that was the thing. We had rules that we ended up setting up because we had these goals, and mine was to process the death of my friends. And Anthony went in with the idea that he wanted to be a better father and a better husband, and how his deployment was impacting his family life. So we both had different goals, but we set rules like no listening to music while we're walking or anything to really kind of distract us from ourselves. And that's kind of the point behind walking as well, is, you know, being with yourself and really there's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to be. And you just have to look at yourself honestly.
Wow. 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 What'd your body feel like after that journey?
At first, it was terrible. It was horrible. We had a lot of challenges, a lot of foot issues. Both being infantrymen, we, you know, threw everything out the window and just used duct tape at the end. we just used what worked best. It was really challenging at times. But that's the beautiful part about having peer support and how much veterans actually support each other. Because we were able to, you know, support each other. The days that I didn't feel like walking, he was able to get me to go a few extra miles, and then, vice versa.
Wow. Were you staying in hotels, or were you sleeping outdoors, like pitching a tent?
A little bit of both.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
Sometimes we would be staying in country cemeteries, and other times we'd get put up in a nice hotel by a supporter. So we had a little bit of mix of both.
You were using cemeteries as a campground?
Yeah. no one was bothering us.
I bet they weren't. Wow. Ain't that something? Oh, man. Wow. So I'm guessing that when you get to a hotel, you're not turning on HGTV. You're probably going right to bed and sleeping.
Yeah. Taking a shower, going to bed. Yeah, usually the thing. And if anyone's interested, that that whole journey was actually captured in a documentary called Almost Sunrise that's available to watch on Amazon. It's a pretty amazing journey.
Wow, that is something. Well, as you talked in your book about PTSD, and the book that you can find now on Amazon by author Tom Voss, it's out now, called Where War Ends. Let's say you do have a family member or a loved one that may be a little reluctant to talk about this. How do you bring this up to them in a way that you know you want to do everything you can to support and help them, even when they're fighting a little bit back? Do you what's the best way to approach this with that type of family member?
You know, I think if you're coming from a place of like honesty and curiosity and caring, there's no really wrong way to ask. If it's a loved one in your family, it's really just getting through the feeling of that you're going to upset that person. And maybe they'll be upset for a little bit, but at least you'll have the peace of mind that, you know, this person knows I care. They know how I feel and I want to support them. Even if, you know, that person does end up getting a little upset, if it's coming from a genuine place, I feel like there's no wrong way to ask. You just have to do it sometimes.
Wow. There's no wrong way to ask. Does it help if it's coming from another veteran, or does it help if it's coming from like a spouse, or does it matter where the help is coming from?
I mean, honestly, you know, if there's veterans out there that are in a place where they can lend support, it's really helpful to have another veteran. But at the same time, you know, family members can ask these questions too. But it's really helpful too to have veterans understand how supportive we can be for each other to help each other through this. I mean, the suicide rate right now is something like 20 veterans a day.
Wow.
So this is an active problem that's happening every day, and that we can all on a community level really do something to help each other.
You know, let's say you go somewhere and someone says, oh, no, we'll park a few blocks away and walk. Do you instantly say, no, we'll pay the extra, we'll park close. I'm done with walking for the rest of, you know, at least for the next couple of years.
I'm good on walking. I have no problem taking a nice walk.
All right. Again, people can find the book Where War Ends online on Amazon. They can pick up a copy there. And you said it's in bookstores. People can check it out.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. And what if they want to find you online? Is there a website, social media, anything like that?
Yeah, my website is themeditatingvet.com, and you can contact me through there.
Great. Author Tom Voss, the book is called Where War Ends, A Combat Veteran's 2,700-Mile Journey to Heal, Recovering from PTSD and Moral Injury Through Meditation. Thank you so much for spending time with us here tonight on KMOX.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
That was very cool. And go check out the book. Look, and I'm on Amazon right now. It's all like 5-star reviews. Anyone that has read it and reviewed it, they're saying great things, fantastic things. And if any of that does interest you, the least you can do is just go online and take a look and see if that's for you at Amazon, Where War Ends. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to talk to our friend Larry Rice. We had him in a few weeks ago, and he was talking about the efforts of trying to get his homeless shelter reopened in downtown St. Louis after the city's been hassling him over and over and over about it. Finally, getting a little bit of support from the alderman, at least one. And what will that lead to? There's going to be an announcement tomorrow about that. Larry said he's going to come on with us next on Overnight America KMOX.
Now, back to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX.
It's a lot of walking. Tom Voss, man, 2,700 miles on your feet. I was just telling our producer, Alex, over there, if I go to a store and we're looking for a parking space, my wife and I, and I take a space and there's one that's closer, she'll be like, why didn't you park up there? Even if it's only a difference of 20 steps. Ah, you can't believe you didn't park up there. Ah, I gotta walk from all the way back here. So you have Tom Voss, who goes from Wisconsin to California on foot. And then there's my wife complaining about 20 extra steps at the parking lot of Kohl's. Welcome back to Overnight America. All right, there's a big development in the headline from the Post-Dispatch, reopening downtown homeless shelter for daytime hours to get support from St. Louis Alderman Joe Vaccaro. And we saw it here in the news at the top of the hour. Alex Degman has been reporting it. You can find it there. And I wanted to talk to Larry Rice about this new development. Joining us now is Larry Rice. Hello.
Hello. How are you tonight?
Good. You know, I'm actually pretty excited. This looks like you may be getting a little somewhere for the last couple of years, man. They've done everything they could to deter you away from reopening this shelter. So looks like there's a little bit of encouragement.
Well, yes. And basically what it simply says is that we can go ahead and do the repairs that the building commissioner on November the 7th, 2018, said we could do after we revised our architectural plans 8 times. And then they try to do an end run with the developers to stop us, which they did. They stopped us from making these repairs. We want to repair the place and get it open during the day.
Yeah, and last time you were in studio, you gave me a copy of this proposition you were looking. Is this essentially what they're proposing at this point? They're trying to say, okay, put a list together, and once that's done, we're going to allow it to reopen.
It's already been put together, a list, yes. It's right up there where it says, shall the city of St. Louis allow New Life Evangelistic Center to make the necessary renovations at 1411 Locust according to the building permit issued by the building commissioner on or about November 7, 2018. And once such renovations are made, the necessary occupancy permits be granted to this facility so it can reopen as a church to serve the community during the day.
Right.
So, yes, that's all we want to do, fix it up and get it open.
Yeah, is that what Alderman Joe Vaccaro is bringing up, or is he talking about something else?
No, this is what he's going to be putting into his legislative forms.
Oh, that's great. You know what I find most encouraging is that all the other aldermen are going to have to respond to this, because if he brings this up and starts this discussion, it'll be good to see where they stand on reopening this homeless shelter. And for the longest time, it seems like they've been somewhat silent other than using the government power to keep you guys shut down. So this is a bunch of steps in a row that seem to be in the right direction.
Well, actually, this is one of two tracks we're taking. If they, first of all, I believe there's a lot of good aldermen, and some may co-sponsor this with him. But in the event it doesn't pass, or maybe it will pass, but the mayor will veto it, we still are out here circulating petitions. Then they're going to have to act again on this, or they're going to vote to let us reopen. If they don't, we take it to the people. We turn in all our petitions. And if the people vote yes, it takes two-thirds of the vote of the Board of Aldermen to undo it. And, of course, then we get a chance to just get it repaired, get it open, yeah. Help these people that are. You have to understand, Ryan, that there is not a day shelter. These people are put out of these pop-up shelters at 6:30 in the morning. They have to wander the streets all night long. No place to go to the bathroom, no place to shower, no place to rest. And so this is going to be a place where they can rest, be treated humanely.
Yeah. Part of this, too, is last time you were in studio, something that really resonated with me was that earlier in the season, the mayor's office said that we're going to put all of these different beds together and give places for the homeless to stay. But one thing you pointed out here that I think is very important to point out is that they're not in one central location. They're spread out all over the place, and it's nearly impossible if you're homeless to find where these beds are if they're open. You know, you just don't know. So it's not like any of this is easy for anyone. All you're doing is trying to make it easy and make it accessible, and you have a centralized location to do so, a consistent service that you've been offering through the last couple of decades. This isn't a pop-up. This is for decades and decades you've been offering this. And it looks like on the 17th of January, so that's next Friday, this is going to go in front of the other aldermen. Are you going to be present during that meeting?
I'm going to make a point on it, yes.
Yes.
Because we've got to push this through. And again, we just want to open up, be treated like everybody else. Why should they make us do all, you know, even more repairs? You know, we went through eight times of putting architectural plans and got the go-ahead by the building commissioner, went in and did 90% of our demolition he wanted us to do. We put up fire doors in there. We put sprinkler systems in. And then to have the pull out from under you. What if somebody had this happen to them when they tried to open their business or their home? They'd be outraged. Why should they treat the homeless any different?
Mm. I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I'm curious, and I'll ask anyway. And joining us now is Larry Rice, and we're going off of the news that tomorrow it looks like Alderman Joe Vaccaro is going to announce that you're going to be bringing this in front of the other aldermen next week, trying to at least put some ground rules together for reopening your homeless shelter. But does he feel optimistic that other aldermen feel the same way he feels, or does he feel like, you know what, I'm just going to help push this process along a little bit so at least we know where we're at?
Joe is very positive. He feels there's some real good aldermen out there that got a big heart. He's mentioned some names to me, and so he may be more optimistic than I am when it comes to the Board of Aldermen, but he's got the inside track, okay?
Overall, in your fight over the last couple of years, because, I mean, your shelter has been closed since April of 2017. It's been a while now. I mean, it's coming up almost on 3 years. It's ridiculous.
Yes.
So since it's been gone that long, and have any other aldermen ever stepped out and said they want to help you with this, or is he the first?
He's actually been the most vocal, but there's been other aldermen that have stepped up to the plate that have said that they feel that this was an injustice and something needs to be done about it. So, yes, there are other aldermen out there. And I think what this is going to do is we're going to be able to see which ones are willing to stand up, let their voices be heard, which ones are going to sit on the fence and which ones are going to just really come down on him. He's taken some heat from downtown St. Louis over all of this. He shouldn't, because the people are going to be there, only they're going to be scattered all over downtown St. Louis rather than being a place where they can be treated humanely all day long.
You know, what day do you meet in front of Mayor Lyda Crewson's office?
I met with her about over a month ago, and we laid it out pretty straight. We said, look, if you don't want us at this location, use some of that LRA property. You got 12,000 vacant lots that are out there, all this ground that's out there. The forestry department spends more money mowing your vacant lots than they do mowing the parks. Why don't you give us 5 acres and then also take a look at this building here and give us enough money and we can build a state of art facility at a different location if you don't like this location. And she just kind of blew it off. And so here we are. This is all we can do. This is the only option we have on the table that we can move on right now.
Wow. No, I meant to say, I know that you meet in front of her office window and you hand out bus fares and things like that.
Okay, that's every Friday morning.
So this is perfect. It coincides with the day that the aldermen are going to be meeting. You're going to be there afternoon. You're there Friday morning in front of her office.
We're going to be there tomorrow morning. I'll be out there at 7:15 with the homeless, and I'm praying that it doesn't rain. Otherwise, we'll be out there when it's raining. But we'll be out there tomorrow morning, and we're going to do something else tomorrow morning. We're going to be registering the homeless to vote. You know, this is really very, very difficult. Many of the homeless people not only lost a place to stay, lost pay for basic functioning in life, they lost the right to be American citizens because they were using 1411 Locust as their address. And they were voting, and they just pulled all that out from under them at time. So we're going to be trying to get them registered. We're going to try to enable them to feel the dignity that they deserve as American citizens.
I would love to hear how they feel the government's treated them over this time frame. You know, Larry Rice, Reverend Larry Rice, joining us of New Life Evangelistic Center. And for people that are unfamiliar with what you offer inside of your building, let's say that this is presented in front of the aldermen, and there is a path for you to reopen your homeless shelter. What kind of things will go on during the day?
Okay, well, first of all, let me tell you, we're doing a lot right now with our safe houses that are open and everything else that's going. But this will give us a place that we can help so many of the unserved at this time. And what will happen is that we'll be able to immediately give them a place to rest. They'll be able to have religious services in there, meals to eat, a place to do their laundry. And I might have to get signatures from the neighbors. It's ridiculous, but they declared us a public bath. So I may have to get signatures just for them to, you know, take showers, but we'll go that route when we have to. I mean, just all the stuff they tossed out before us from the neighbors, signatures from the neighbors. We're going to give them a place that they can get on the computers and find jobs. We're going to have a free store where they can get clean clothes and be treated and dignity, and they can clean up and go out and get jobs and get off the street. That's my goal, is to get have them get jobs and get off the street and break the cycle of homelessness.
Wow. You know, in your estimations, you have this list of different repairs that they would like to see happen at that building. How close are you to checking all of those things off the list?
Well, when I consider my architectural fees, this doesn't include the legal fees. We've probably spent close to $300,000, and I'll probably have to raise another $500,000. I got a lot of plumbing I got to do in there and a lot of things, but I know that. But no, what happened is the developers, sued us, and they wanted us to not just fix up the basement first and second floor. That's what we're going to use first for our day center. They want us to go in and put sprinkler systems through the third, fourth, and fifth floor, put a major fire retardant walls up, just do ridiculous stuff. That would cost upwards many, many hundreds of thousands of dollars more, which was totally unnecessary. And then even going out, we tried to get another architect to come up and even do what they wanted. And they said, no, the architectural plans you got are great. They're consistent. How can we do it any better? So we've just seen the politics in this whole thing.
Wow. Do you feel, personally, do you feel that any other places in this area have the same level of scrutiny that they're given to you?
No, there isn't. If they did this with every business in the city of St. Louis, they'd pack up and they wouldn't be in town. I mean, we're not for all the benefits and annuities that they give all these other businesses. We just want to be treated the same way. At 8 different times, our plans were revived. We kept taking them back. Finally, the building commissioner said, November 2, 2017, okay, you're fine. Go on and fix this up. We'll give you the permit. We're going there and spending the money, fixing it up. And then what do? We see this development take place behind the scenes where these developers sue us and the city. And I thought, okay, well, we'll pass right through the Board of Building Appeals. Well, we didn't. Those are all appointed by the mayor. And they turned around and sided totally with the developers. So It's unbelievable what we've had to go through, but we're going to keep going through it because I know the suffering. I hear the stories every day. People come out and join me tomorrow morning under the mayor's window and talk to the homeless and let them tell you what it's like to be put out at 6:30 in the morning when it's raining or it's freezing, it's cold, you have nowhere else to go at all.
All right. So one more time, if people wanted to help and they are very sympathetic with the hassle the city has been giving you, what can they do to help?
Well, please, you can do two things. One, you can go to our website at nlecstl.org. That's New Life Evangelistic Center.org. You can plug in there, or you can call tomorrow, 314-421-3020. That's 314-421-3020. Or they can drop by our headquarters if they want to bring stuff down there. We can give to our first responders to take to the streets. That's at 2428 Woodson Road in Overland, Missouri. But again, go to nlecstl.org. It's all listed there.
Well, so what was the website one more time?
NLEC, standing for Our New Life Evangelistic Center.org.
Got it. All right. Thank you so much, Reverend Larry Rice, for the New Life Evangelistic Center. And I'm going to hope for the best. I'm going to keep an eye on this, and I'm hoping for good things after this is presented to the aldermen next week. Thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Thank you. Good night now.
Good night. And he joins us on the TDK Technologies guest line on Overnight America KMOX.
This is Overnight America, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com on KMOX.
Oh, very good. I'm glad that we had a chance to hook up with Larry Rice. And, you know, that's very encouraging that Alderman Joe Vaccaro is going to be holding that news conference tomorrow morning. They're going to talk about their plan to bring a bill before the Board of Aldermen that would allow them to complete the renovations and get his homeless shelter back up. There's so many things, and I got to say this. It's so disappointing when there's people out there that their goal is to help the homeless. I mean, he's out there doing so much good, and the city is fighting him from doing good. It is unbelievable that this has been going on for nearly 3 years. Enough is enough, please. Let's go to Big Al, who's calling in. Hey, Big Al.
Well, just like New York and California, they're run by Democrats, and Larry Rice is the man. I've helped him before. I brought stuff down. He's a true Christian-loving man. And all you people in Chesterfield, Lake St. Louis, wherever, just think about this. What if the coin flipped? All right? Don't act like you're all that. Hand it out and help people. In the city of St. Louis, you should be ashamed.
I think that it's nearly 3 years, and finally, someone is willing to say, and thanks to Joe Vaccaro, and we're not saying that he's late, but better late than never. Just get this going. Talk to the other aldermen. Let's expedite this process, and let's stop harassing him and let him start helping the homeless again.
Don't forget your home city, Detroit. Another one.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah. So, you know what? Everybody's moving out of the Illinois, New York, California because they're run by Democrats. And you know what? Wake up, people.
Yeah, let me.
The next president of the United States, Donald Trump. And by the way, Rex, I went to the Blues game tonight, second in a row, and they never lose.
How about that? Nice big win. You get wet walking back
and
to your
car? Hold on. I'm going Saturday and Monday. So there.
Perfect. Keep it going, man. All right,
and,
Big Al.
And I'm going to take you to a game.
I know. You keep saying that.
Well, you know, don't give me your cell phone because your wife will get mad.
I know. Well, you know what?
Welcome to town.
Thank you, Big Al. Good to hear from you.
Bring the kids out for fishing. I already told you.
I know. It's perfect.
Rex. Somehow you've won our hearts.
Thank you,
Big
Al.
I don't know how you and Raby did it, but Highland is not happy.
Thanks, Big Al. Good to hear from you. Bye. Big Al's fun, man. But you know what the city of New York has done and a lot of other of these cities when they have an issue with homeless and they don't have the capital or the ability to take care of them for a long term, they decide to bust them out. They'll take them to other states and say, okay, if you want a ticket out of here, we'll pay for a new beginning somewhere else, but then you're on your own. So what Big Al just mentioned there, what about all these other surrounding cities? If the coin was flipped, what would you be doing in a situation like this? Let's just say the city of St. Louis decided to say, all right, we're just going to redistribute the homeless so they're not concentrated in St. Louis. Let's take some out to St. Charles. Maybe they'll have better luck living out there. Then what? Isn't it a shame that there's a organization for decades, going back, I think it's the late 70s, that have been helping the homeless every day for decades, and for the last 3 years, he's been not allowed to do that at that location. It's just, it's ridiculous. Let me go to Dane, who's calling in. Hi.
Well, he's my favorite radio guy.
Ah, yeah. So that's number three for the night. Thank you, Dane.
I just want to say I support Ray Rice because I used to be homeless myself. Of course, you probably didn't know this. Mm. But, yeah, I used to be homeless for a while, and then I volunteered for a place in Dallas, which was run by First Baptist Church in Dallas, where we'd feed people and, you know, give them clothes and food and all that other stuff. You know, it wasn't just for homeless people. It was just for everybody, and I enjoyed doing that. And, you know, I would, you know, I have sympathy for the people who are homeless who get thrown out at 5:36 in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and it's freezing and cold, and you know you can't go into little fast food places and sit down and warm up because they'll throw you out.
Yeah, well, think about it this too: if they could even get a space to begin with, who knows if they were even allowed a space through the overnight? Maybe they slept out all night anyway.
All I can say is I hope he's still listening, Larry Rice. I really do support you, and if I had the money to support to help you out, I would, but I'll just keep you in my prayers that they open this shelter back up where the homeless people would have a place to stay during the daytime.
I hope so,
thanks,
too.
Thanks, and you have a great night, Ryan.
You too, Dane.
And you are my favorite.
Woo! Thanks, Dane. Awesome to hear that. All kinds of great compliments tonight. You know, it feels good getting some compliments. I did get one person that was upset with me through the texting. Let me pull up the text real quick. It said, when you are new in town, you should not go on and there's a misspelling. I think they meant righteous rant about, another misspelling. I think they meant ruining the trolley people have been working on for years. If you think I'm the one that took down the trolley. No, I'm just an observer that could see this clear-minded and with open eyes. They had some major issues for the absolute longest time. I wasn't the one to take down the trolley. The trolley took itself down. Well, no. If you do the trolley autopsy, there's about 10 organizations involved, on none of which took the lead, it looks like, and was able to handle this sort of thing. All right, here's the phone number, 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. NewLifeEvangelisticCenter.org is the website if you wanted to check out the things that they're fighting for. And I got to say, this is a great thing. Tomorrow morning when they put that press conference together, they make that announcement, you're going to find there is an awful lot of support to allow them to help the homeless. If there was a long line of people out there that said, we are ready to open up our shelter, we're, you know, and everyone's getting into the game, we're all going to help the homeless, that doesn't exist. He's been doing it for decades. There is not a lineup of people trying to help the homeless. Let him do his thing. Let him do his thing. KMOX.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.